Okay, I'm told by the town clerk that there's a very long line of people waiting to check in. So what we're going to do is it's 7:33. We're going to get started with some of the preliminary introductory remarks that I need to make, and hopefully we'll have people filter in. I would ask that you be as accommodating as possible so that as people do arrive, you slide in. There's a lot of open seats in the middle, and it's necessary for us to kind of make sure that they're filled up. No one can be standing during the town meeting. So, good evening. I've determined that a quorum is present, and I hereby call this special meeting to order. My name is Michael Fee. It is my privilege and an honor to serve as moderator for tonight's special town meeting, as well as the continuation of our annual town meeting, which will begin immediately after the conclusion of the special town meeting. Before we get started, I have a few announcements. For those of you who were not here last night, the fire exits are located at the rear of the auditorium where you entered, as well as behind me through the stage. I'd like to say thank you to the Boy Scout Troop 63 under the direction of Scoutmaster Peter Fishman and its members Ryan Gummer, Tommy Neeland, Gavin Montero, and Colton Simon, who will serve as our microphone runners this evening. I'd like to also thank the members of Girl Scout Troop 66247 under the direction of Troop Leader Kristen Fisher, who are staffing the refreshment table tonight. Thank you to Ashley Manakia, Lena Levitt, Caroline Davis, Catherine Johnson, and Emily Fisher. Please stop in and ask them about their Gold Award projects. Keeping us safe and secure tonight, Sergeant James Espinoza, Officers Michael Lewis and Officer Owen Griffin from the Sudbury Police Department. Thank you, gentlemen. We also have a distinguished guest in the audience tonight. Some of you may remember Judy Cope. She served as selectman for the town from 1988 to 1994, and she's joining us tonight from out of town. Judy, are you here? Are you here? Thank you. All right, on to the special meeting. Now, many of you have asked why we are having a special town meeting in the middle of our regular annual town meeting. Well, it's because Article 2, Section 1 of our bylaw states that the warrant for each annual town meeting must be closed on January 31st, and no article can be taken up at town meeting unless it appears in that printed warrant. Each of the six articles before you tonight on the special town meeting agenda arose in one form or another after January 31st, 2016, and the warrant for the annual town meeting was already closed. So the selectmen issued a separate warrant for this special town meeting to be held concurrently with the annual town meeting. It's a way of saving time and money. You should have a warrant. Looks like this. If you don't have a warrant, there's some on the post box at the table in front here. If you need a warrant, raise your hand, raise your card, and a member of the Boy Scout troop will bring one to you. Keep your cards raised. Gentlemen, if you could distribute some extra warrants. Some people have asked, where is the special town meeting warrant? Well, it's right inside the first page. If you open up the first page of your warrant, the special town meeting starts right there. You also have a special card for your special town meeting. It's pink or fuchsia. Looks like this. Everybody got one? If you don't have one of these, you can't participate in the special town meeting. The regular town meeting card is yellow. We'll use that next. So for the purposes of the first six articles that we're going to address, use your fuchsia card. For the record, I've examined and found in order the call of the special meeting, the officer's return of service, and the confirmation of timely mailing of the warrant to all residents. I'll ask for a motion to dispense with the reading of the call of special meeting, officer's return of service, and the individual articles of the special meeting warrant. Is there a second? There's a second. Majority vote. All in favor of the motion to dispense with the reading of the warrant, raise your pink cards. Some more majority vote. All opposed? That passes unanimously. How many of you are attending your first town meeting? Okay, just not too many. But thank you for coming and welcome. What I'm going to do is I'm not going to repeat from last night the procedural rules that I went through at the beginning of the annual town meeting, but I'll give you the Reader's Digest version and try to hit the highlights. And then if you have questions procedurally, excuse me, I'm speaking. Please sit down. Thank you. If you have any questions regarding the town meeting procedures at any time, please stand up, say point of order. I'll be happy to explain it to you. Now, your town meeting warrant also contains a summary of town meeting procedures. And if you've had an opportunity to read that would be great. You'll be well acquainted with all of the procedural items that we need to do tonight. Just to go through the basic nutshell rules, though. Only registered voters in the town and non-resident town employees or elected state officials may speak without leave of the hall. If at any time you wish to speak, raise your card. Once I recognize you, a scout will deliver a microphone to your seat. The microphone will be on. And if you were here last night, you may recall that we had some technical difficulties with microphones. I got a primer from Lynn Puro and other members of the Sudbury TV crew last night and today on the proper use of a microphone. Now, when you get the microphone, it's important to hold it as close to your face as possible and point it at your chin, much like this. And that way, it will be able to pick up the full range of your voice, and it will not be overwhelmed when you give it a big t or a t. And so that's a professional microphone tip I got from Lynn. But more importantly is that when you first start to speak, sometimes the mic will not immediately pick up what you're saying. So just be patient, continue to speak, and eventually the microphone will kick in. And the reason is that there are 15 different microphones that we're using tonight, and they're all turned down until it's time to use the one that is being used by the speaker. And at that point in time, the technician is going to search for the microphone that's being used and turn up the volume. So you got to give him just a split second or a couple seconds in order for him to realize which microphone is on and turn it on. So, but be patient and eventually we'll get there. The other tip that I got is that when you hear feedback, don't hold the mic out like this. If you hear feedback, just hold it closer to your chest and just wait a minute and it will go away. Finally, you may remember last night that we were playing musical chairs with the microphones up here, and that's a no-no. All of these mics are numbered, and so in order for the technician to be able to figure out which one is on and which one is not, or which one needs to be turned up, you have to keep them exactly where they are. So that's the primer on mics. Presenters of articles may speak for a maximum of 10 minutes and all other speakers for a maximum of 5 minutes unless additional time is granted by the hall. All your motions of substance, including motions to amend the article, must be delivered to me, the town clerk, and Mark Thompson, the town administrator, who's sitting right here in the red shirt, before they are made. Now, each article in your warrant describes the quantum of vote necessary, that whether it's a majority or two-thirds or four-fifths in order to pass. And I will announce to you before we take every vote which quantum is necessary in order for the motion to pass. Someone made the point last night quite rightly that sometimes what's written in the warrant is not what I'm saying the quantum of vote is what's required. And that's true. There's sometimes changes between the time that the warrant is printed and the time that we actually present the article at town meeting. So I will be careful to tell you the proper quantum. I will check with town council to make sure she agrees that we're seeking the proper quantum. But again, if anybody has a question about whether or not we're using the proper procedure in taking any vote, stand up, say point of order, and we'll address your procedural question. I would ask that every speaker tonight treat every other speaker with courtesy and respect, no matter how strongly you may disagree with their point of view. Our rule here is that there's no clapping, hissing, booing, or other audible noise for or against any speakers, either before, during, or after presentations. Speakers simply may not make disrespectful comments, whether directed at a voter, a speaker, or a town official. I'm informed that the lines are still long outside, but we've got to move along. So I'm going to move to Article 1, motion by Chuck Woodard. Yeah, why don't you open the... Okay, before you start, it looks like we're going to have an overflow crowd on the main in the main auditorium. Usually I keep the upper level closed until this is totally filled. It appears to me that because we have such a long line outside, it makes sense to open the auditorium balcony now. So, Boy Scouts, if we could send a Boy Scout upstairs and let the tellers know or the check-in people know outside that we're going to open the upstairs balcony now. Okay, Mr. Woodard.
Move to indefinitely postpone Article 1.
Is there a second?
Aye.
Presentation by Mr. Woodard on the motion to indefinitely postpone.
Just briefly, this was initially intended to request funds to pay for the due diligence on potentially purchasing a conservation restriction on the Wayside Inn property. Our estimate of the cost is now much less than we originally thought, and we think we have sufficient funds in reserves to be able to pay for it without asking for money from free cash, so there's no longer a need.
Okay. Finance Committee for a report. Mr. Barker?
The Finance Committee unanimously recommends indefinite postponement of Article 1.
Okay. What's the position of the Board of Selectmen?
The Board of Selectmen supports the postponement.
Discussion. Anyone wish to be heard on the indefinite postponement of Article 1? I see no one. We're going to move to a vote. It's a majority is required. All in favor of indefinitely postponing Article 1, raise your cards. All opposed. That motion passes unanimously. Article 2. Please stand and identify yourself if you have a point of order. Can you get a mic? Can you get a mic, please? Okay. Did you get that? Do you want your cards back? I stole the town clerk's cards for the demonstration. Okay, Article 2, funding litigation costs for the Eversource project. Motion by Ms. Giuliano.
Thank you, Mr. Moderator. I'm going to point this at my chin. Move that the sum of $185,000 be transferred from free cash for the purposes stated in the article.
Does that receive a second? It does. Presentation by Ms. Giuliano.
The purpose of this article is to appropriate money so that we can use that in the fight concerning the Eversource Sudbury to Hudson Reliability Project. This is to prepare us, to position us, to be able to get the best outcome for Sudbury that we can in this particular proceeding. So, first, how did we get here? This is a very brief background. The Federal Energy Regulatory Commission creates and regulates what are called independent system operators, and those ISOs then cover regions of the country. So ISO New England covers six states, and within that northeastern New England region, they have been working on a plan in a smaller subset area called the Greater Boston, Southern New Hampshire area to improve the reliability. And they have adopted and approved what's called the Greater Boston and Southern New Hampshire Solution. Within that solution, there are 40 projects aimed at particular gaps that have been identified by ISO. As part of that process, Eversource has submitted a proposal to meet one of these particular identified areas. And that proposal is called the Sudbury to Hudson Reliability Project. It's just one of 40 in this whole set. ISO approved Eversource's proposal. What they approved was what's called the Eversource Preferred Design. And that approval means that Eversource can now take that design to the state siting board. The state siting board then has to approve that project before it can go forward. So this project that ISO has approved for the next step is to connect the Sudbury substation to a station in Hudson, Hudson Light and Power Substation. We're told that this project benefits primarily towns west of Sudbury, but that there are other components of the whole Greater Boston solution that benefit Sudbury. So what is this preferred design? Basically, I know many of you have already read about this, but just to review, this involves running high voltage overhead power lines along the MBTA railroad bed right-of-way. That's the Mass Central Railway that runs east-west through Sudbury. The total project connecting the two substations is 8.9 miles, but the Sudbury portion would involve 4.3 miles along that railroad bed right-of-way. And to do this, to construct this, Eversource would need to clear-cut 82 feet wide to build this, and they would also build an access road about 12 feet, and then they would maintain this throughout through their vegetation management plan, which often involves the spraying of herbicides. Okay, this is a map. You've seen many maps, but this one focuses on the Sudbury portion instead of the Hudson portion, and this is the map of the MBTA railway that is part of the preferred design by Eversource. As you may know, it starts at the substation close to Buddy Dog, goes across Landham, across Route 20, through historic districts, and then up west into Hudson, and it cuts through or along Sudbury's Hopbrook Conservation Land, the Memorial Forest, which is preserved by Sudbury Valley Trustees, and the National Wildlife Refuge. So what are some of the impacts of this proposed solution? From our perspective, we see that this proposed solution threatens our scenic and historic town character, our property values, potentially our town budget, depending on valuations, our environment in especially vulnerable and carefully protected areas, and possibly our water drinking sources, drinking water sources. So, what are we going to do? Here's what happens next. We anticipate that by the end of June, Eversource will file a petition with the Massachusetts Energy Facilities Siting Board. This is the board, the state board that that is reviewing their project. And what they will provide is their preferred design, the one I just described, that has overhead towers along the right-of-way. And they will also submit an alternative design. As many of you may know from their open house and other presentations, originally Eversource was planning to submit an alternative that would go underground along the MBTA right-of-way. They've more recently indicated that they're exploring options that would go along local roads. It would be buried underground, but along roads through town and into Hudson. They've indicated that's likely to be their alternative, but we don't know, and we may not know until it starts. So this siting board process has many steps, more than are on the slide. But the key things for us to focus on at this point are that we as a town can intervene as a party. So Eversource files a petition, they're a party in this hearing, in this long-term hearing process, but we as a town can move to be a party, and when we do that, we then have all the rights of a party, like discovery and presentation of witnesses and testimony, cross-examination of witnesses, submission of briefs. This is the best way for us to bring forth our interests. There's also a special provision for group intervention. That is, other groups of people, such as groups residents who are impacted, can also intervene as a party in this process. So our own widely supported resident group, Protect Sudbury, also plans to petition for intervention. This benefits all of us to have both parties involved because we each can press certain interests within the proceedings. We plan to work in a collaborative and complementary way to seek the town's best interest through this process. One other thing I'll note is, aside from the siting board process, there's also an environmental review at the state level under the Environmental Policy Act, and that is, or is it protection? I don't remember. But in the event, we will submit commentary in that process as well. So, what do we need to do that? We need money. We've already begun this process. We've hired counsel, and we've been working with funds that have been transferred within the FY16 budget. But going forward, this is going to be a very long-term process. The siting board process, from the beginning to the decision, not necessarily an appeal, typically takes about 18 months and is very involved, requires the use of expert witnesses. So we need to prepare for that by allocating additional funds as we go forward. And those would pay for a variety of our needs would be not just legal fees, but the experts and consultants that we need to make our case. And aside from this planning board process, we are also working with a government relations firm. And this firm has been helpful to us in connecting us with state actors who can have an impact on what happens on this MBTA right-of-way. So where will the money come from? Remember last night we talked about free cash? Free cash is that fund balance that's left at the end of the year that the state then approves or certifies that we can appropriate. So, as noted, we started with $1,199,999, but last night we did take some actions. We allocated a portion of that to the operating budget, and also every year we take a component of free cash if we are able and put it in our stabilization fund to meet our goal of keeping the stabilization fund at 5%. But having done both of those things last night, we can still now tonight appropriate $185,000 for this year's work in the Eversource project, and we will still have money remaining in free cash above the limit that we aim for. We don't want to ever reduce our free cash unless necessary below what is one half of 1% of the budget. So for this year, that would be $454,716. But we will be able to go forward with this plan without reducing our free cash to an unacceptably low level. It also will not affect the budget we voted last night. It doesn't affect any of the tax information you received. It's not part of that May 17 ballot. You should go vote anyway and vote on the capital items, but this will not be part of that process either. So please support this so that we will be in the best position to work forward, to work towards the best solution that we can for this in countering and addressing this project.
Thank you, Susan. Finance Committee report, Mr. Barker.
The Finance Committee unanimously supports this Article 2.
Board of Selectmen report?
Selectmen supports this article.
Okay, discussion. Anybody here on this article? Okay. Who wants to be heard on the motion under Article 2? Yes, ma'am. Right here.
Yes, hi.
I'm sorry. Please stand, sir.
My name is Vincent Napa.
I'm sorry. Can you say that one more time, please?
Vincent Napa, N-A-P-P-A.
Thank you.
Okay. I have several issues if I want to address. Especially the right-of-way along the MBTA path. The way it is now, it's not a good plan because of the damage it's going to cause to the environment. And there's several articles like the Wetlands Protection Act. I don't know if it's going to comply with that. I'm for putting the wires on existing roadways. I think that's the best solution because, of course, it would need detours, working at night, and not working during rush hour. And perhaps Eversource could give Sudbury residents a discount on utility bills, maybe 20%, to pay a portion of the bike path along the MBTA right-of-way with no buried wires underneath. And also they mentioned about Roundup that they have to spray to kill the vegetation. There's some studies stating that if Eversource uses Roundup, it says, from Science Daily, even small doses of popular weed killer fatal to frogs, scientists find. So they're going to have to spray it all through wetlands, all through conservation land, which is not, it's going to be an environmental disaster. Secondly, this Article 97 of the Constitution of the Commonwealth of Massachusetts, this is in 1972, it says, I quote, "In 1972, Massachusetts voters approved Article 97, granting people the right to a clean environment and authorizing the Commonwealth to acquire conservation easements. Article 97 was intended to be a legislative check to ensure that lands acquired for conservation purposes were not converted to other inconsistent uses." And I would say, having transmission lines through conservation land is not in compliance with Article 97 of the Constitution of the Commonwealth of Massachusetts. And so, for that reason, I'm opposing the current project, except if they're going to build buried under existing roadways. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Napa. Who else wishes to be heard on Article 2? Can we get a mic to this person in the blue, second row in the balcony, please? Can you stand up, please? Oh. Sorry. Okay, who else wishes to be heard on Article 2? Back in the corner here. Gentlemen, please stand.
James Brown, Al Horse Pond. Real quick, how many lawyers are going to be involved in this?
Wait. Can you say your name and address for the record, please?
James Brown, Al Horse Pond Road.
Thank you.
97. How many lawyers involved in the hourly rate for lawyers?
Ms. Giuliano, do you have an answer to that? Oops. Sorry.
Mr. Moderator?
Yes, you may.
Through you, Mr. Moderator. My name is Barbara St. Andre. I'm with Copeland and Page Town Council. And for this particular...
Watch your chest.
For this particular litigation, which is anticipated, we have an attorney in our firm who will be working on this who has handled many similar situations. I've also worked on similar utility appeals with the EFSB, so I'll also be assisting. And we have a staff of over 40 attorneys, so if necessary, we can pull in additional help if things require that. In addition to that, as was mentioned earlier, a very key part of this process is the expert witnesses, which are extremely important in this type of litigation, and we have already been working with those experts to start preparing. So that's we have a fully assembled team, and we are ready to go forward.
Thank you, Council. Who else wishes to be heard on Article 2? Right here in the middle. Please stand, sir.
I'm Glenn Merrill Skoloff at 18 Allen Place, and I'm just wondering how we arrived at the sum of $185,000, and do we anticipate that that's going to be all that's needed, or is that a maximum or minimum? Or
this isn't...
You may.
This is an estimate at this time going into the fiscal year. We've already spent some money this year, but we anticipate that the total legal fees will be about $125,000, although we've already started with that, and that we are also allocating about $100,000 towards the public and government relations contract that's begun. We've had an initial short-term contract, but anticipate doing more of that work as well.
So then it's believed that this $185,000 will wrap this up, or is it open-ended?
We believe that this will be sufficient from what we know now for the siting board process. We have not talked at all about funding should we appeal a decision or take some different action in another setting.
Thank you.
Okay. Anyone in the balcony wish to be heard on Article 2? Gentleman in the red. Can you get a mic right here?
Thank you.
It's on.
Okay. My name is Diego Arabo. I live on 15 Windsor Road. And the question I have is for the attorney. Could you comment as to precedents on cases like this where towns confront utilities in what past outcomes have been so that we have an idea of where we're headed?
Counsel?
So there have been many cases. It's really hard to say which, you know, which precedents are the most on point at this time because we're still early in the process. There were some cases where towns or cities have been successful, and there have been others where they have not been successful. And again, I think one of the important issues in that determination will be the expert witnesses, what are the environmental and other impacts of the route, and exactly what, again, we haven't even seen the filing yet from Eversource, so we have to wait until we see exactly what they propose. So it's hard to really say at this point. There have been cases that go both ways.
Further questions or comments on Article 2? Oh, right here, on the end, ma'am. Wait a second. Get a mic.
Hi, I'm Rebecca Chisholm. I live at 21 Whitetail Lane. Hopefully Tall Plains pretty soon. So I actually had a conversation with Eversource when I was home shopping on that side of the town. Because of that answers, I went and I did studies. There are health implications, even low and high emissions from those cause health problems. So I've been kind of trying to get that information out to see if I could help with that success. I think before you say you're going to put it under the ground, you ought to take a look at this. So it's just that I'm very concerned. It's not just the scenic beauty. It's not just the money for the homes. It's more the health of our environment and us, our people.
Okay.
Thank you.
Mr. Coe.
Mr. Moderator, it might be worth noting that there is a precedent here in Sudbury. Some years ago, one of Eversource's predecessors wanted to run a high-tension line across the Sudbury River and through most of Sudbury up into Maynard. And that line exists today, but is underground. So it does show that there is at least hope that when the town rises up and fights, that it's possible for a powerful utility to back down. That's not to say that it'll happen in this case, but it could. And certainly appropriating enough money to litigate the fight properly is something that will at least get the attention of the utility, at least one hopes.
Thank you, Mr. Coe. Other comments or questions regarding Article 2? This gentleman right here, second row.
Jim Gish, 35 Rolling Lane. I strongly support this article and to follow on what Mr. Coe just said about this fight with Boston Edison that occurred in the 60s, the town was much smaller then, and it was all carried on by the town. But at the time, they weren't dealing with a huge corporation like Eversource that we have today. They have unlimited funds for legal assistance as well as experts, and so this will be an uphill battle. I'm particularly proud of the fact that the town and Protect Sudbury, of which I'm a director, have come together to work in this sort of public-private partnership. I think this is unique to my experience in town. I'm very, very proud of this effort, and I appreciate everything that everyone in the town and the citizens have done. You know, one thing that comes to mind, the pictures of Hopbrook Conservation Land, that land was bought by the town of Sudbury in 1967 from the Sudbury Rod and Gun Club. You know, we've done a very good job the past few years of spending public funds through CPA and other means to acquire conservation lands and set them aside for ourselves and for future generations. You know, I think we have an obligation to our you know, the folks that fought this battle before to carry it on and continue to protect the lands that they fought so hard for, and to continue to fight for the lands that we ourselves have set aside. So I strongly support this article and urge you to support it as well. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Gish. Let me ask you a question. Anybody want to speak against the article? No one? Okay, do we want to talk some more or do we want to vote? Okay. I'm going to ask that the election workers come in from outside so that they can have the opportunity to vote on this as well. We're just going to give them a minute to get in here. Do we have all the election workers that want to vote? Tom, what's going on? Can you take a break from checking them in, have your tellers come in and vote, and then go back to the... I'm sorry, I got to take this vote. We need to move it forward. So please ask the people that want to vote to come in, and ask the people that are in line waiting to be checked in to just kindly wait a minute. Okay? I'm not sure their votes are going to make a big difference, Tom, but... We're going to take the vote. Quantum of vote required is a majority in order to pass. You have the pink cards. All those in favor of the motion under Article 2, please raise your cards. All opposed. That passes unanimously. Article 3, amend fiscal year 16 budget, Lincoln-Sudbury Regional School District, motion by Mr. Hardy.
Move to indefinitely postpone.
Does that receive a second?
It does.
Mr. Hardy for presentation. Oh, I'm sorry. Ms. Brown.
Okay, so the reason that we will be indefinitely postponing this... The reason that we will be indefinitely postponing this is that the Lincoln Sudbury Regional High School School Committee has rescinded their vote to do the transfer, so there's nothing actually to discuss. Thank you.
Finance Committee report.
The Finance Committee unanimously supports indefinite postponement of this article.
Okay. Board of Selectmen?
Board of Selectmen support.
Postpone the article.
Discussion. Anyone wish to be heard on Article 3? Anyone wish to be heard on Article 3? I see no one. This requires a majority vote to pass. All in favor, please raise your cards. All opposed. Okay, that passes nearly unanimously except for one vote. Article 4. There's a typo in your warrant. If you turn to the town council opinion, it's third page in, town council opinion regarding this special town meeting. Town council opinion refers to Article 37. It actually refers to Article 4. Just wanted to draw that to your attention. Article 4 is to amend Article 9 of the zoning bylaw, Section 42-43, Water Resource Protection Overlay District. Motion by Jody Cavlock.
Good evening. Move to amend Article 9 of the zoning bylaws as stated in the article.
Does that receive a second? Does. Presentation by Ms. Cavlock.
Presentation up for a second. Good evening. Jody Cavlock, Director of Planning and Community Development. It has, in the past several months and between the time the annual town meeting warrant was produced and when the special town meeting warrant was opened, it's come to the attention of the Planning Board that the current wording in the zoning bylaw, provision 4243M, which is a provision in the Water Resource Protection Overlay District, and it is regarding uses that are allowed by special permit in Zone 2, is outdated and could have some serious negative impacts on the environment and the economic development potential of some commercial properties in the Route 20 corridor. Which one more? Which one do I press? Thank you. Up on the screen is the actual provision itself, and I apologize for not printing that in the special town meeting warrant so that you could actually see the full context. The stricken out words are what we are asking this board, this body, to amend and strike permanently from this bylaw. So generally, the purpose of this bylaw is to protect and preserve groundwater quality, since Sudbury relies wholly on groundwater for its drinking water supply. And the provisions in this bylaw, and it's a long and lengthy bylaw with much complexity, but the provisions generally prohibit uses that treat, use, store, or dispose of chemicals and hazardous wastes on properties that are within the contribution zone of our town's drinking waters. And thereby, the bylaw seeks to keep these types of dirty uses and businesses from locating in close proximity to the groundwater supplies. As I mentioned, this is a map of the Water Resource Protection District overlay. The red is the Zone 2, which is the area that contributes directly to the groundwater, and the blue are outlying areas that under extreme pumping conditions of the Sudbury Water District's wells could also have a contribution, an influence on the drinking water supply wells. So as you can see, Route 20 runs through this map, and the town's main aquifers are located directly under the Route 20 businesses. The bylaw was originally adopted in 1988 and unfortunately has grandfathered many of the existing businesses because Route 20 was fairly heavily developed by 1988. But what it has done over the past several decades as it has kept new, potentially dirty businesses from locating in close proximity to these groundwater supplies. And that means no new gas stations have opened up, no new car washes, photo processing centers, on-site dry cleaners have been allowed to open in Zone 2. And this is a zoning bylaw. The Planning Board is the special permit granting authority. Okay, so here's the current bylaw. The Planning Board's modified this bylaw many times over the past decades. Any of you who have been here, you've seen us up here. We tinker with it. In 1988, it was a very prohibitive bylaw, and it actually had some severe economic development limitations, basically not even allowing some businesses to expand by 500 square feet or less. So the revisions over the years, as well as other environmentally protective bylaws such as the Stormwater Management Bylaw and the Sudbury Wetlands Protection Bylaw, have helped to mitigate concerns for groundwater supply in other areas, and the town has been enforcing and then enacting all development proposals under these bylaws as well. So in general, the bylaws have improved the quality of groundwater in Zone 2, not only by prohibiting the dirty uses, but by requiring infrastructure upgrades to existing properties, and that's what's required under the Stormwater Bylaw. So this article is one more attempt to update the bylaw so that it accomplishes its purposes. This provision, 4243M, prohibits the expansion of privately owned... Now, I'm going to get technical here, but just bear with me. It prohibits the expansion of privately owned wastewater treatment plants in Zone 2. This prohibition does not comply with the state model bylaw, and I'll show you that in a minute, which only prohibits the expansion of treatment plants which discharge industrial waste. We have three treatment plants currently in Zone 2 in Sudbury. They all treat domestic and commercial sanitary waste, and those types of waste are not prohibited under the DEP regulations. And this is the DEP model bylaw, and as you can see, it talks about non-sanitary wastewater, which is industrial wastewater. That's really the prohibition that DEP is aiming to get into these bylaws. I'll also note that any time a treatment plant is expanded, it's upgraded with newer technology, which generally is more environmentally sound. So prohibiting expansion and upgrade of this facility, as our current bylaw does, is not the most environmentally protective nor most economically beneficial for our town. So the small change is needed. It's needed right now for one specific property, the Sudbury Pines Extended Care Facility, and that's the situation there is what brought it to our attention. That property has had many problems with its wastewater treatment for many years, and right now is under a DEP order to upgrade its facility. And that owner wants to upgrade it and add 5,000 extra gallons to it, and our bylaw currently says that they cannot do that. So they would have to go for a variance to the Zoning Board of Appeals, and it's not guaranteed that they would get it. So I think what we want to do is allow them to expand their facility, upgrade it to the newer technology so that they can comply with the groundwater standards that DEP wants. I will also note that the Raytheon property is another property in Zone 2, which also wants to upgrade its wastewater treatment plant for the new development. That's not the reason why we're putting this forward, but it's a consequence of this bylaw. But as you'll see in June 13th, when the Planning Board does come forward with a new zoning bylaw for that property, many of these inconsistencies will be put together in one overlay district specifically for that property and other properties that will be in the overlay district. But I did want to bring that up just in case anyone is curious about that. So the Planning Board urges adoption of this article. Thank you.
Thanks, Jody. Does the Finance Committee have a position on this?
The Finance Committee has no opinion on Article 4.
Board of Selectmen position?
The Board of Selectmen supports this article.
Discussion? Anybody wish to be heard? Questions or comments regarding Article 4? Right here.
I'm Jeff Parker, 19 Old Forge, and I'm a little confused on this. This change in the bylaw makes it easier to expand. and more water. And I don't understand, doesn't that make it less environmentally sound? I understood that it's newer technology, but with more water going into the aquifer, are we not worried that that is, you know, counter good environmental?
Okay. Joe, do you understand the question?
I'm not an environmental engineer. Maybe Lisa Eggleston is in the room, but I'll say that what I do know about that is that it really wouldn't have any impact because all of these bylaws require use of water and then to be infiltrated back onto the property. So it's a net zero. You use the water, it goes right back down into the aquifer.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, George, stay right there. Anyone else? Right here.
Hi, Mike O'Malley from 177 Plimpton. I noticed on the second change in the specification that it may allow, I could be incorrect on this, that it may allow a subsurface sewage disposal system, which I assume is septic, to be upgraded to a treatment facility. So would that possibly allow somebody who has a septic system in Zone 2 to upgrade to a larger facility and significantly expand what might be an unintended commercial growth?
They wouldn't be able to automatically do that. There'd be many permits that they'd have to go through. So first of all, they would need a DEP permit if they were going to a treatment plant. They'd also likely need site plan approval from the planning board. And they would need a special permit under the Water Resources Protection District Overlay Bylaw. So it wouldn't be an automatic approval. There'd be many layers of permitting.
Okay. Does that answer your question? Okay. Questions or comments? Right back here.
Rebecca Cutting, 381 Maynard Road. And
I'm sorry. Can you say that one more time?
Rebecca Cutting, 381 Maynard Road.
Thank you.
I think some clarity might be useful here. My understanding of the amendment is that it will allow presently on what's called an on-site sewage disposal system, which is a septic system, to go up 10,000 to 15, which is what the state allows for basically a passive system like we all have for our homes. A publicly owned treatment works back in 88, in fact, Willis Hill was the exemplar case. In those days, we saw fit to prohibit them because there were no legally binding requirements for their ownership. That has changed under state regulation. So any septic system over 15,000 gallons has to be a more active system to meet state water quality standards and would require probably nitrogen and phosphorus removal, which is what we would want to look for such a system in our zone 2. And the fact that the model bylaw from the state prohibits industrial uses, I think, is useful. One would hope that the industrial dischargers would be required under the state groundwater standards, which is 314.4 and is linked to 314.5 to do enhanced removal. And I'm hopeful that anything I've said that's inaccurate, Ms. Cavalak can correct. Thanks.
Thanks. Anyone else wish to be heard? In the back, in the balcony. Yes, sir.
Bill Cooper, 11 Cedar Creek Road. I'd like to know the Board of Health position on this article. Historically, I believe the Board of Health has been the one that permits subsurface septic disposal systems, and I'd like to know what their opinion is on this.
Is there a representative of the Board of Health present? Do you know the position of the Board of Health, Jody?
I do not know if the Board of Health has voted a position on this, but we have worked over the years with the changes to the bylaw, and if it was not last year or 2014 when we brought forth the article to delete the wastewater treatment facilities bylaw, the Board of Health did support that because they felt that it was very outdated and was not protective of the environment or the groundwater. I do know that the Board of Health director is aware of this. Bill is not here, I don't think. And that he is also aware of the Sudbury Pines situation, which is a very difficult situation. They've been trying to upgrade that facility for many years. And I believe that the newest DEP regulations are the most environmentally protective, and this bylaw would not replace any of those DEP regulations or protections, but merely just change what authority the planning board has under the special permit requirements. So hopefully that answers the question.
Okay. Anybody else? I'm sorry. Right here. Mr. DePompei. Hold on. I'll get to you in a minute.
Thank you, Dan DePompei, 35 Haynes Road. You know, I was okay with this until we got to the point to where the Board of Health hadn't looked at it and made a ruling.
Okay.
I'll just leave my statement there, but I can't believe we don't have a procedure that says something that involves increasing the amount of septic back into the aquifer doesn't have to go through the Board of Health. And maybe someone on the Board of Selectmen would like to comment on that. Thank you.
Anyone on the Board of Selectmen want to take that bait? Guess not. Okay. In the back. Please stand way in the back, sir. Yes, you.
Greg George, 39 Meadow Drive. So did this go before the ZBA, the Zoning Board of Appeals, and did they reject it for some reason? I'm talking about the Sudbury Pines one. And then the second question would be, if this is voted down, does that stop the 40B project at the Raytheon site or impact them significantly? Thanks.
No, this has not gone before the Sudbury Pines project has not gone before the ZBA yet. If this bylaw does not pass tonight, they likely will have to file a variance. And this has nothing to do with any of the 40Bs in town because this is a zoning bylaw, and 40B projects are exempt from zoning. I did also want to just comment on Mr. DePompei's issue. The funny thing about this part of the bylaw is that anything that is subject to a groundwater discharge permit by DEP, which is what we're talking about here, actually doesn't get local Board of Health approval. It's only subject to a DEP approval. So I think that might be why they didn't make any comment on this.
Okay. Yes, sir, right here.
Quick question. Bill Schneller, 37 Jarman Road. If this bylaw were left unchanged, could the town get town sewer along the Route 20 business district?
Yes.
Okay, so.
It has no impact on that.
So the bylaw as is allows for the business district to have a sewer installed?
Correct.
Okay. Anybody else have a burning desire to be heard? Way in the back. I'm sorry. Okay, Mr. Baranowski, are you waiting to be heard? Okay, get him the mic, please. One of you, which of you wants to be heard? Okay.
John Baranowski, Belcher Drive. There were three plants. You named two. What's the third one that potentially could be expanded?
Longfellow Glen has a privately owned treatment.
I just wanted to get that into the record.
Right here. Is that you, Mr. Sample? No. Oh, okay. Stan. I didn't recognize you in the front row.
Brian Temple.
Give it a minute. Brian Temple, 15 River Road. So if we vote this down, you could still get Sudbury Pines, if what I heard correctly, a variance, and they could still move forward?
They can apply for a variance. I mean, I can't say that the zoning board would grant it. There are statutory requirements for granting a variance that have to meet those statutory requirements.
So isn't that a more conservative way to go rather than change the bylaw and get unintended consequences that we may not fully understand for the rest of the wastewater district or rest of the area?
No, that's for town meeting to decide.
Okay. And the second question, does the Sudbury Water District need to weigh in on this?
It's a local bylaw that the planning board is the special permit granting authority for.
So the water district hasn't gone before that?
To my knowledge, I have not heard that they have taken a voted position on this.
Okay. So I guess my comment to Paul would just be, we've seen zoning changes in the past perform unintended consequences in town, and if there's a way just to do a variance for Sudbury Pines, that's at least how I want to vote. Thank you.
Okay. Right back here. All the way in the back, sir. All the way back.
I'm sorry. If Sudbury Pines has a facility and the Raytheon property has a facility, they would be subject to... Michael O'Malley, 177 Plimpton. Sorry to be a pest and ask two questions. Again, if Sudbury Pines has a facility that needs to be expanded and there's a facility at Raytheon that would be expanded, why would we need a strike-through on item 2 above, granting somebody who has an existing septic system to go? It just seems unnecessary.
I guess the only thing that I would put forth again and just reiterate is that this bylaw has many limiting provisions for our commercial business district. And in some cases, it makes it very difficult for our businesses to expand, even by a small amount. So as you pointed out, number two, provision two, if somebody wanted to replace their existing septic system, and I'll use Lotus Blossom as an example, because they do replace their septic system just about every 5 years. Say they wanted to replace it and put in a treatment plant that's subject to this bylaw, and say they wanted to increase the capacity of that, this bylaw would not, as currently written, would not let them do it. So it is a limiting factor to commercial businesses. It really is. We have many bylaws in this town. Businesses come in. They routinely need 5, 6, 7 permits. And so what we've been trying to do is strike a balance between making sure that the environment is fully protected, and we have a number of those types of bylaws, and then allowing the commercial businesses to continue to operate in Sudbury.
Okay. Thanks. Anybody else? You ready to vote? Okay. This is a zoning article, so it requires a 2/3 majority to pass. All those in favor of the motion under Article 4, please raise your cards. All those opposed? Let's do that one more time. All those in favor? All those opposed? Motion fails. Article 5. Petition article, fund legal counsel in connection with Sudbury Station development and Peters Way land swap. Petitioner David Hornstein for a motion. Mr. Hornstein? I'm sorry. Please.
Scott Smigler, 125 Plimpton. Mr. Moderator, move in the words of the article.
Is there a second? Wait a second.
Just a minute. Mr. Smigler, could you come over here for a minute, please?
Okay.
Move that the sum of $45,000 to be transferred from stabilization fund established under Article 12 of October 7, 1982, special town meeting for the purposes stated in the article.
Does that receive a second?
It does.
Mr. Smigler.
I'm honored to be with you here today on behalf of Opposed Sudbury Station. So here we are, 5 years later. At the 2011 annual town meeting, a land swap was approved between the town and a private landowner. It was represented to town that the land traded to the private landowner would be used for one residential house lot. 5 years later, the town is faced with a large-scale housing complex that directly abuts our historic town center, and a developer whose attorney has used the worst words possible to denigrate the citizens of Sudbury, many of whom have voiced legitimate concerns about this project. In the next 10 minutes, I'll provide a very brief overview of the project, summarize the response it's evoked from the town and its citizens, share a few reasons why it's critical the town hire counsel to assist with legal and litigation matters related to this project, and then outline the purpose of the funds we seek. So what is the village at Sudbury Station? According to the most recent analysis provided by the developer in April as part of the sightline study, it's an apartment complex composed of 13 separate structures, some more than 56 feet tall, on land created to sustain one house. There will be 250 units in all, suggesting density of 18 units per acre, which is three times the average 40B in Sudbury. There will be 500-plus parking spots planned in place of 10 acres of trees, with over 1,600 daily vehicle trips, according to the developer's own traffic study, which has yet to be fully vetted by the town's peer reviewer. 30-plus waivers are being requested from Sudbury zoning bylaws, and a new on-site sewage treatment plant is required to handle 43,000 gallons per day. This, by the way, is a typical four-story elevation, of which there are three planned. There are many reasons why we're opposed to this project. These pictures reflect just a few of them. On the top, you see Parkinson's parcel, a Sudbury town treasure that provides open space to Sudbury's residents. At the bottom, you can see how the beautiful view from this parcel will change. This is, again, according to the visual analysis submitted by the developer. These are their pictures on the bottom. This graphic, by the way, neglects to include the massive new retaining wall that will be added here as well, where children play. At the top, you can see a picture of the historic cemetery that abuts the proposed Sudbury Station. At the bottom, you can see how the new buildings will tower over the cemetery, according to the developer's own visual analysis. The bottom picture is their picture. A special note here, I've heard from a lot of citizens of Sudbury who have children, spouses, and parents buried in this cemetery. They are mortified that a quiet place for reflection will now be towered over by large buildings. This is also, to my knowledge, the only active cemetery in Sudbury. Many people have purchased lots and do plan to be buried here. And this is the view of oncoming traffic from Peters Way, one of the two egresses proposed. ASHTO recommends site distance of 280 feet, but you can see that at peak times, visibility is severely limited. A driver must essentially commit to pulling out into oncoming traffic before gaining full view of upcoming cars. This is a dangerous new intersection that will be created. It will cause further traffic delays and safety issues. I should note that these roads are heavily trafficked by school buses and children to multiple schools and aftercare programs. There are three schools within 1 mile of this area. After hearing from the Conservation Commission and Historic Commission and other stakeholders like the police and fire departments, the Board of Selectmen weighed in against this project in a strongly worded letter dated November 5, 2015. They wrote, "We believe that a development of this size with unsafe access is as currently proposed, adjacent to a National Register Historic District, surrounded by mapped priority habitat area and on a parcel created to sustain one house will have severe impacts that may not have the capability to be mitigated. This, by the way, was not a knee-jerk reaction against 40B. The Board of Selectmen had two options in front of them, the Avalon project at Raytheon and Sudbury Station. They decided to proceed with the larger of the two projects and oppose Sudbury Station. They felt so strongly they requested a special meeting before Mass Housing to share their concerns. So the town's leaders are clearly against this project. The town's citizens are also against this project. In just 1 week, we collected 850 signatures to two petitions opposing this project. The latter asked the town to hire counsel, which is what we seek funding for today at town meeting. Poor compliance with ZBA process on the part of this project's developer is one critical reason why specialized counsel is necessary. The town's director of planning and community development illustrates the ZBA compliance issues well in her monthly memos. She wrote in March, "Most of the recommendations noted in my memo, dated 2/17/16 on this application, have not been responded to." She continued, "Many recommendations remain unanswered. Most prevalent is the lack of a grading plan and stormwater management plan." And then in April, recently, she wrote, "Lack of essential engineering information has substantially constrained the review process for this application." What's obvious? The ZBA is not receiving information on a timely basis, and we're halfway through the ZBA proceedings. Many of the detailed plans and studies have not been delivered. I'm concerned these plans will be delivered so late in the process that the ZBA and its peer reviewers will not have adequate time to fully assess the details of the project. The 40B process recognizes the town should be able to shape these projects, but given the resources at the disposal of this developer, it's hard to have a voice without funding. We also need an attorney to establish legal noncompliance so a stronger case can be made on appeal. Therefore, in addition to pursuing the potential for litigating Peter's Way, we would like the attorney, which the town has already engaged, to compel the developer to provide accurate and timely information, to address the full scope of community concerns, inclusive but not exclusive to traffic safety issues, environmental impact, and historic character, and to ensure the proposal is scared appropriately to the site. According to the budget proposed by council the town has already retained, we believe the requested $45,000 for fiscal year 17 will be sufficient to fund legal fees barring any unexpected or unanticipated costs. In summary, the funds will be used by the Board of Selectmen to hire an attorney representing the town who will be the client. The purpose is to assist the town with any legal and litigation matters related to the Peter's Way land transfer, comprehensive permit for the Sudbury Station project, and related matters including assistance at ZBA hearings. And the funds should be sufficient through the end of fiscal year 17, excluding unexpected or unanticipated costs. I'd like to thank all the volunteers who have worked tirelessly over the last few months for petitions and lawn signs and raising awareness of this project in Sudbury, the Board of Selectmen and the FinCom Committee for supporting this project, and for all the citizens of Sudbury who wanted to be heard on this issue. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Smigler. Finance Committee report, Mr. Barker.
The Finance Committee unanimously supports approval of Article 5.
Board of Selectmen, Ms. Brown.
Board of Selectmen support this article.
Discussion. Who wants to be heard on the article? Does anyone wish to be heard on the motion under Article 5? Please. Stand up, please. There you go. Can you get him a mic, please? This gentleman right here.
Hi.
Wait a minute. I recognize this gentleman right here.
Oh, excuse me.
I'll get you next. Okay.
David Miller, 53 Intervale Road.
My two cents worth on this and the power line issue that we were discussing previously is that it just behooves the town to get the absolute best representation that it can. Without really being able to mention anything specific, I know over my many years of living here and reading of things that have occurred in the town, I'd say there have been times when I've come away a little bit underwhelmed by the legal representation that the town has had in place to address a particular issue. Mr. Semple mentioned that the attorney for the developer had already made some disparaging comments about citizens of the town. If you can trust the information on the internet, I happen to Google the developer's attorney, and in the past he's been cited by the Board of Overseers, so you know, of the legal profession. So it's good to know who you're doing battle with.
Mr. Miller, I'm going to interrupt you right now and just repeat my comments from earlier and remind the hall that it is improper to make disrespectful comments about anyone. You can speak very directly and emotionally about the substance of an article, but it's our practice here to refrain from making personal comments about anyone. So I would just like to state that to you so that you're aware of our practice.
That. Sorry, I missed that at the beginning. So the bottom line of my commentary is that I hope that this funding passes, and I implore the town to get the most capable counsel possible.
Thank you, sir. The gentleman right here.
I'm Steve Stoutman, 27 Lillian. Being the simple, humble engineer that I am, I wonder if someone could please spend a minute or two explaining to me how you go from a permit for one home to 250 units and 500 vehicles. Perhaps this has been explained elsewhere, but I have not seen it.
I'm going to interpret that as a rhetorical question and a comment.
It is genuine. I do not understand the mechanism by which one would go from zoning from one home to 250 units. I'm being quite straightforward.
I understand you're being puzzled by that, as are many people. But I would remind you that the purpose of this article is to appropriate funds for an attorney. And I think that it would be our time would be well spent to focus on that specific issue. And if there's information that could be had that would answer your question specifically, I think that might be better done offline, if that's okay with you.
It is, and I think it's a great idea to advance this amount of money and any more that might be necessary.
Thank you, sir. There's a woman right here in the front row.
Karen Gadarian, 16 Arena Road. I just have a question about the town's intent on this article as a whole. Are they opposing this entire project as a whole? Is that what the fight is for the funds for the legal defense? Or are we just trying to get the developer to scale it down?
I'm going to hazard a guess that as this matter is likely headed toward litigation, the town would not be anxious to discuss its legal strategy. And if I'm incorrect about that, members of the Board of Selectmen can correct me.
Currently being reviewed by the CBA.
Okay. So Mr. Hardy just stated, and this is accurate, that the matter is currently under review at the CBA, and the purpose of the article is to appropriate funds to hire legal counsel to represent the town at that proceeding. Does that answer your question? Not really? Okay. Anybody from the town care to address that issue in a different way?
No, I think that actually covers it, that at this point, where the 40B process is, it's very cut and dried. It's described by law. The Zoning Board of Appeals is reviewing a request for proposal for a comprehensive permit. They have a statutory responsibility. They have a prescribed set of hearings. I mean, they've got very tight timelines, and they've got legal requirements for what they can do. The one thing that we can do as the board is, and what we have said that we would do, is that we will have a lawyer to represent the town in those hearings, in addition to Barbara San Andre. She's there to see that the hearings go smoothly and according to the books. This person would be there to advocate for the town. But there is no mechanism for, there is no way to, and it would be flat out wrong for the board to interfere in any way with the workings of the ZBA.
Okay. Other questions or comments regarding Article 5? Right here, sir. Second row.
John Seeger, 26 Whispering Pine. In answer to the question that was well voiced, and I'm sure is widespread, is how do you go from one house to several hundred? We brought it on ourselves. We did that by restricting new developments of low-cost housing. 40B is a dragon that devours towns that don't have what is termed in that law adequate housing for lower income people. People, for example, like our own firemen and town employees who can't afford to live here. I'm not a legal expert, but we have friends who were connected with a 40B development in Scituate. And that gentleman is a professional engineer who testified and vigorously that the development would raise the water table in that section and, in effect, pollute the ground below the new development. The development passed. He is putting his house on the market now, probably at several hundred thousand dollars less than it would have been priced. That's the driving reason that the 40B developments are grounded in the legal belief, I believe, that it's very difficult to overcome them. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Other questions or comments regarding Article 5? Anyone over here? Just a minute. Anyone over here? Nobody? Okay. Please stand. It's difficult for me to see you if you... Okay. Here you go.
Hi. James Brownell, Force One.
Hi.
Let's go with this gentleman right here. We'll get you next.
My question is, how is the Sudbury Station development in Peter's
Lane? I'm sorry. Can I get your name and address one more time, please?
James Brownell, Horse Pond Road.
Okay. Please proceed.
My question is, how is the Sudbury Station development in Peter's Way land swap, how is that related to the Raytheon development? And is the town going to approve or not approve Raytheon? Is that a separate development? I think myself, maybe a few other people thought it was all kind of combined somehow.
Pat, do you want to take that?
The way 40B works is that a project is brought, and you get the site eligibility letter from Mass Housing, and then the project is brought. There's a comprehensive permit application that is put before the Zoning Board of Appeals. Until a community has created its 10% of housing, then once that request goes before the Zoning Board of Appeals, there's a very strong presumption that the 40B should be approved and that the affordable housing should be built. Okay. In Sudbury, we are lucky to have an approved housing production plan, which says that if we were to create a certain fraction of housing, 0.5% of our housing stock, that we could have a safe harbor, which would say that we would not be required to approve 40B process proposals brought before the ZBA for another year. The thing is that what created means is to have approved a comprehensive permit. So we were not at 10%. The first project, which was Sudbury Station, brought their comprehensive permit application before the Zoning Board of Appeals. The second project came in, which was Avalon Bay. They brought their project before the Zoning Board of Appeals. The two projects are now moving through the process at the same time, but it is not the case that if one of them is approved, then the other one is stopped. Since they are both under consideration, they will both move through the process to completion. So it's not an either or, it's two projects that are in parallel moving through this process. Does that address what your question was? Okay, thank you.
Very clear answer, Pat. Thank you. There's a woman in the front row who wants to be heard.
Hi, Abla Shkair. I'm from 240 Mossman Road. And I want to actually, I'm really surprised because the location is in the historic, as everybody knows, the historical area of Sudbury, that should be protected by the nature of the place. In addition to the fact that there should be no residential high rise over there for any reason, be protected.
Anybody want to speak against the article? Mr. Matthews.
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Moderator. Kevin Matthews, Haynes Road. I have a nuanced statement. I am in full support of the article and full support and full sympathy of folks feeling against it. But I'm concerned, A, that the amount requested might not be enough. It seems the magnitude of this project and a number of like 45,000 seems to me to be almost de minimis. And second, what concerns me even more than that is I don't believe that there's a true understanding of why this Sudbury Station project has come to be. And without that knowledge, I don't think we're equipped to be able to formulate a proper strategy or a broad range of strategies, if it's not too late, of turning this project back. You know, when I saw this project announced, I looked at the location of the maps and I thought of two things first. Newton's law, Newton's first law, and Newton's third law of motion. Really. The first law is a motion at rest. An object at rest will remain at rest unless an external force is applied against it. Now, a particularly attractive aspect of Sudbury is its open spaces. These are a large degree privately held by landowners, such as those owned by Sudbury Station property, and there are others, the Moores in North Sudbury, the Pantry Brook property, and the Cavicchio Farm. All of these properties abut the proposed Bruce Friedman Rail Trail. And these landowners have worked hard for years to have the rail trail conform to local bylaws and to limit the negative effect that this would have on the wetlands. But all of these landowners have been frustrated by a process driven largely by outsiders from Sudbury and those who use the political process within Sudbury to drown out their voices of concern. So in 2012, the town paid $7.5 million to restrict the development of Pantry Brook project property. Was the rail trail the sole reason for that? It's hard to know one way or the other. Now, in 2016, another abutting property is proposed, the Sudbury Station project. Coincidence? Random behavior? Or cause and effect? Two objects at rest are now in motion due to the introduction of an outside force, a small road that would bisect our town and their properties forever. Now, what leads me to next is to Newton's third law of motion. Every action will have an equal but opposite reaction. So the town's growing support of a wonderful recreational opportunity in the rail trail, a path for bike riding and rollerblading, imagined by many as adding quality to the town, is likely to disrupt these larger properties in the town and to cause them to cash out and develop their properties.
Mr. Matthews, I think I see the thread of where you're going, but I would just remind you that we're discussing whether to appropriate $45,000 in legal fees to oppose the Sudbury Station project. So if you could get closer to that subject matter, I won't interrupt you again.
Okay, I appreciate that. My concern is that there are two more properties in the way and that we are on the wrong strategy. We're using a strategy of blaming all of this on a land swap, whereas that is just part of this action, opposite reaction, cause and effect. I support this article fully, but I suggest you take this outpouring of support for stopping Sudbury Station and fix the cause, not just the effect. It may not be too late.
Thank you, sir. Anyone else wish to be heard on Article 5? In the balcony, second row. You're next.
Jerry Sherman, Peter Rowley.
Is this article in to oppose the Sudbury Station, like he said? And I think my question would be, would this to be to improve the traffic? I'm not quite sure about that. I don't know. Is this to oppose the to vote on the Sudbury Station altogether in this article?
The motion under Article 5 is to appropriate $45,000 for legal fees to assist the town in opposing the project before the ZBA. Did I misstate that in any way?
I think you did. Yeah. I was confused by the article, that's why.
Two-thirds, right? Okay. Anybody else wish to be heard, or can we...
Thank you.
Sorry, I recognize there's a woman here. Yes, right here. Wait, no.
Hi, Kristen Salerno.
No. This woman right here who's standing. Thank you. She's been waiting patiently. I'll get you next.
Quentin Andrews Parker, 1904 Porridge Lane. Where did the $45,000 number come from?
Mr. Smigler, can you address that?
So in consultation with town manager, we believe the $45,000 combined with, I believe it was $25,000 that's already been transferred, will be sufficient to take us through the ZBA process, will be sufficient hopefully to take us through the appeals process, but not sufficient should there be any other major litigation related to this. I believe it gives us approximately 200.
Moderator, if I may, currently we already have transferred $25,000 in this fiscal year from the finance reserve account. We would combine this $25,000 with the $45,000 that is proposed for tonight. So we'd have a total of $70,000. I believe that money would take us through the hearing, and if we did have an appeal, could take us through the appeal process. In my conversations with Scott over the last few days, I said that we can't have any guarantees. If this went to the Supreme Judicial Court, it certainly wouldn't be enough money, but it certainly would get us started. We're paying $195 an hour. We figured out it would give us about 230 hours of legal representation.
Okay. Does that answer your question?
I'm concerned it's not enough. The developer has deep pockets, and when you think of just the cost of doing depositions, I don't have a better number than 45, but I'd like the town to be as well equipped as possible.
Thank you. Could you pass the mic just down to your left? I'm sorry, your right, my left.
That was a good question.
Yeah.
I'm glad I waited. Hi, I'm Kristen Salerno, 564 Peckham Road. I knocked on a lot of doors to try to get signatures to ask for this amount, and I'd love to see more, because people at every door did not know what this was. And I'm very concerned that people don't understand the implication of the village at Sudbury Station. I'll just share my concern, because I think that's our platform tonight. I'm concerned about safety. I'm a mother of a 4-year-old and a 5.5-year-old. My 5.5-year-old goes to Noyes. I want to make sure that the buses coming out of the village at Sudbury Station are going to be able to cross that traffic on Hudson safely with the children who are welcome to this community if we get that far. But I want to make sure those kids are safe and that my child is safe, who may likely be on that same bus. So that's one concern. Another concern, I have two children who are on inhalers. My kindergartner goes to Noyes and SED, located right there in front of what's proposed. There are thousands of tons of ground and dust that will move. The landowner confirmed that in the ZBA meeting just recently. How are those children, my children and all the other children on inhalers and having respiratory issues and other health issues, going to manage all of that tonnage of dust and earth that's moving? I'll leave it at that. Thank you.
Thanks. Anyone wish to speak against the article? If we're going to call a question, somebody needs to make that motion by standing and being recognized. You want to speak against the article, ma'am? Please, get her mic, please.
Cindy Fanichel, Old Lancaster Road. I am probably grudgingly going to vote for it, but 2 points. I do think 45,000 won't be enough. And also, I really feel uncomfortable voting to spend so much money when this is going to keep coming up unless we, as a town, commit ourselves to meeting our 40B requirements. And I'm just concerned that I see no movement in that direction.
You've already spoken, sir. Mr. Hardenberg. A motion to call the question has been made. Does that receive a second? It does. Okay. All those in favor of calling the question, this is a two-thirds majority required. Please raise your cards. All those opposed? Okay, that passes by well more than two-thirds. We'll proceed to a vote on the main motion. The quantum of vote required for passage of this article is two-thirds. Yes, sir. Please stand. Get a mic to Mr. DePompei, please.
Dan DePompei, 35 Haynes Road. First of all, I'm in support of the article, but there are other people in this row that had questions that were new information. So my question is, would it not have been appropriate to ask before going to the vote, were any of the people with their hands up, and their hands were up to add new information?
That's a good observation, but not an appropriate point of order. The motion was made to call the question. It passed by well more than two-thirds. We're on to the vote. Quantum of vote required for passage of this article is two-thirds. All those in favor of the motion under Article 5, please raise your cards. All those opposed? That passes nearly unanimously and certainly by well more than two-thirds. I'll take a motion to adjourn the special town meeting. Dissolve this special town meeting. Is there a second? All those in favor, raise your cards. All opposed? It passes nearly unanimously and by well more than a majority. Okay. We're going to take a two-minute break before we start up with the annual town meeting continuance.